Hello, and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real-World Perspectives. I'm Diana Isaacs, joined by my co-host, Natalie Bellini. And in this episode, we want to talk about diabetes in pregnancy, one of our favorite topics that we're both very involved in. And there were two recent publications in this area. One, the first one we want to talk about is called the GLAM study. And this was actually really characterizing those levels in people with and without gestational diabetes and really comparing what those looked like with continuous glucose monitoring. So Natalie, you want to talk a little bit about the methods in this trial?
Sure. So let's first start with the GLAM study. And what is the question that they were looking to answer? Can continuous glucose monitoring identify specific patterns early in pregnancy that are associated with a diagnosis of gestational diabetes by oral glucose tolerance test at 24 to 34 weeks. So they actually looked at women before they were diagnosed to say, what is that question about? Is 24 to 34 weeks where we should be doing this? Are these women showing signs of dysglycemia before that time? So this was an observational, non-interventional study in expectant mothers without diabetes that were enrolled prior to 17 weeks delivery. So, you know, handfuls of weeks before we actually would even do that glucose tolerance testing. 768 participants were included in the analysis, of which 58 did develop gestational diabetes. They wore blinded CGM, so they couldn't see what was happening. They wore Dexcom G6 throughout gestation. The main outcome was diagnosis of gestational diabetes. Remember, they couldn't see their numbers, so they still had to do the same behavior of oral glucose tolerance test. And they compared those people with GDM, their glucose values, with people without GDM at 24 to 34 weeks gestation. So, Diana, do you want to talk a little bit about the results?
Yeah, definitely. And I also just want to highlight the importance of this study because we just know the limitation of glucose tolerance tests. It's really not super fun to do it in bulk stream liquid. Usually in the U.S., we offer two parts. First, starts with 50 grams. If you don't pass that after 1 hour, then you should do 800 grams for a glucose tolerance test over 3 hours with a bunch of lab that draws. And so it's not a super fun, pleasant experience. But also the concern is that by the time we identify people in their pregnancy, that there's probably already been some dysglycemia earlier. However, we offer this oral glucose tolerance test earlier in pregnancy. Sometimes the results are just not sensitive enough, either miss cases or we end up overdiagnosing cases. So there's a real question, number one, about could CGM be used potentially to diagnose and identify cases of gestational diabetes? That's one. But number two is kind of, what is the normal glucose ranges in pregnancy? Like, what should we be aiming for? Because honestly, we don't have any guidance right now. So when you look at the international consensus on time and range, yes, we have guidance for type 1, for type 2 diabetes. We even have guidance for type 1 diabetes in pregnancy, 70% time in range between 63 and 140. However, when it comes to either existing type 2 diabetes, or in this case, true gestational diabetes that is identified in pregnancy, we actually don't even know what the goals are. We don't know. We all know it should be at least 70%. But we suspect it should be higher than that. And so that's why this study is so important. And I think these results are very clarifying that it does need to be a higher than that 70%. So what were the results? So interestingly, not that many were actually diagnosed with gestational diabetes. So there were only about 8%, which is a little less than what we typically see in the general population, which even in the background of the article, they say is up to 14%. So this population may not be fully reflective of kind of a fully real world population, but still, I think we can learn a lot from it. So when we look at the results, they actually looked at 63 to 120 for time and range in addition to 63 to 140. And so they found the group that actually went on to have that diagnosis of gestational diabetes spent 70% of the time median between 63 and 120 compared to 84% in that group without gestational diabetes. There was also greater time spent over 120. So it was 23% in the GDM group compared to 12% in the regular group. And then when it comes to time over 140, there was a median of 7.4% in the GDM group versus only 2.7% in that group without gestational diabetes. So I guess I find that really interesting because 7.4%, I mean, that's like spending over 90% of the time in range. So it kind of begs the question of what should the goals actually be? And I think we see that they're already spending more time in range. We probably need to have tighter targets for this population. But Natalie, curious on your thoughts.
Well, I think the big thing is not only do we need to consider adjusting that time in range to time in pregnancy range, but we also need to recognize that these women were 17 weeks gestation. We don't start even hoping to schedule a glucose tolerance test. And like you said, you say, hey, you need a glucose tolerance test. It takes a week or two to get there because you got to wait the first time at least. You know, you get there, you wait in line, you drink the drink. You get it, you wait an hour, and then you get their results. And then we do it again sometimes for the people that fail the first time, right? I mean, this is multiple weeks where a lot of these people are waiting and waiting to finally get results to start getting treated. We're seeing changes as early as 17 weeks, and this was just the start. I wonder what would happen. It's 15 or 14 weeks even, right? And these people were not diagnosed with type 2. These people did not have diabetes at the time that we started this. And those numbers had already changed. So when we look at the risks of, you know, of gestational diabetes, should we be screening earlier? Should we be putting more people on CGM? Are there risk categories that we should be identifying? I mean, there's so many things that this has brought up that it's like the greatest thing ever that we can now start talking about really targeting improving outcomes for both the fetus as well as the person with gestational diabetes. I'm excited about this.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up because they did separate it out. So the results I just shared were kind of like through the whole pregnancy period up until they got diagnosed and maybe started therapy. But they actually split it out first trimester, second trimester, and third trimester for whatever data they had. And there was actually already a trend, even
yes.
in the trimester,
right.
where there was less time in range for the group that developed GDM.
Right.
So I think that, to me, really raises the point of could CGM in the future be a diagnostic tool to really help us identify it earlier? Now, the thing that we don't know based on this is how this might, you know, the earlier identification, how that might translate into maternal and fetal outcomes. But one thing we do know is that despite our best efforts to treat GDM, often there are implications, there are CGR large for gestational age babies, despite diagnosing right away and starting treatment. And so I think it really begs the question of doing this OGTT at weeks 24 to 28 is probably too late. Like,
yes.
We probably, and if, you know, by the time you do it at week 28, and then right, by the time someone gets in and gets their education, and it's week 30 plus. So I think it really raises the point of if there's dysglycemia earlier on, we should be identifying that potentially and treating that. And so it's, yeah, I mean, there's so many potential implications to practice. It's
yes.
really quite interesting.
Yep.
Yeah. So
of course, in pregnancy and diabetes. Absolutely.
More to come. We'll see how that maybe affects guidelines. Hopefully we'll get a guideline maybe later this year or next year. Now, one other really interesting study I want to talk about is the CRYSTAL study. And we were both really fortunate to be at ATTD this year in Florence, and so we got to hear their readout. But recently, it was actually published as well in the Lancet. And so now we have those full results. And so to just share, I'll do a quick overview on this one. So this was the Medtronic 780G system. And this was used in pregnancy with type 1 diabetes. This is a system that's not, does not have approval for use in pregnancy, but it's frequently used off-label. And so this was actually a double-arm parallel group open-label randomized controlled trial that was done in 12 different health systems. And patients were randomized one-to-one to the 780G system or their standard of care. Now, one thing interesting about their standard of care is that for most, actually, it was, they were also on an insulin pump. It just wasn't a hybrid. It wasn't the 780G. It wasn't a hybrid closed loop insulin pump. There were a few on multiple daily injections, but most were actually on pumps. Anyway, the primary outcome was to look at the proportion of time spent in that time in range, 63 to 140 throughout the various periods of pregnancy. And then there were some secondary outcomes to look at the overnight time in range as well as time below range. So do you want to share the results of that?
Sure. So in what happened, right? What are we trying to do? First of all, we were really hopeful in this group because the Medtronic system can set that lower target threshold, right? That we want, that we can aim at, which is lower than any other hybrid closed loop. And, you know, ultimately, so the hybrid closed loop participants spent less time with glucose lower than 3.9 millimoles and lower than 3.0 millimoles and lower than 2.8 millimoles. And the low glucose index was also significantly lower in this group compared with the standard insulin therapy group. Overnight time above range was lower in the women using that Medtronic system than their standard insulin therapy. And the coefficient of variation was also lower in that therapy group as in the standardized group. So although their larger data looked very similar, when you actually do that sub-analysis, I think there are some really important points that we're actually reducing those low glucoses, reducing that standard the coefficient of variation. And both of those are really important. But the final thing I want to say is that it was also, they reported they liked it better. And that to me is everything.
Yeah. So I think you bring up some great points. And when it comes to that time spent to range, that 63 to 140, you know, the baseline, the 780G group started at 60.5%. The standard therapy was 57.6, so starting off a little lower. And then after was 66.5 with 780G and 63.2 with the standard. So basically not statistically different, and unfortunately under not quite meeting that 70% time in range. But when you look at that overnight, that's where the difference really was, where there was a higher percentage of 75.1% with the 780G compared to 67.2. Now, understanding with the 780G system, it wasn't designed for pregnancy. The lowest target is 100, which is actually the lowest target of our FDA systems. We will have type 1 with the FDA, but it's not in production yet. 100 is a limitation because we'd love to see it be a little bit lower. And then also one of the things I just want to point out is the fact that the control group was really well managed. Like they started off with baseline A1C of 6.5%. So when you compare this to other studies, so the one that really comes to mind is ADAPT, which was done with CAM-ETS, which is a system outside of the US, but is actually a use of pregnancy in Europe. And that's a system that can be down all the way to like 81 milligrams per deciliter. So you have a much lower target. Now, in that trial, they did show a difference between the control group, but they included a group that really had higher A1Cs. And when you look at their control group, they had a much higher percentage of people on multiple daily injections of insulin. In this study, it looks like almost 96% were on insulin pumps. And of those, 80% were on sensor augmented pump therapy. What that means is the pump has this ability to actually either suspend when it's low or a predictive suspend. So that's a very different comparison group. So I would call out that caveat and then also just say, I think to me, we do the best we can in practice, and satisfaction, like you mentioned, is really important. Like someone, not everyone has the capacity to manage their diabetes every minute of the day. And so it's so hard in pregnancy. And so I think that satisfaction piece, if you even have equivalent outcomes and you have reduced that burden off the person with diabetes, that's a win.
You've done everything, right? Exactly. You have done everything. And that is, you know, the more we remember 20 years ago, ADA didn't even have a psychology track. And now we have this behavioral medicine and psychology track, and we talk about the person that's sitting in front of us every day. And we manage pregnancy and diabetes. You're managing pregnancy. You're managing this person is, you know, lots of times still working, doing this, has other family, does whatever. This is like, if I can reduce that burden and help that person wake up closer to 100 every day, I have improved and just taken off that weight off their shoulders of worry. I want that. So I'm impressed with this data. And again, less hypoglycemia, no matter how much less, is better for everyone. In a lot of these people of childbearing age, they're driving cars, they're raising other children, they're doing very important things. They have jobs, they have families, they have all of this. And I need them to be safe. And I'm very impressed with the reduction in hypoglycemia.
Yeah, I am too. One other thing I do want to call out, that one thing people did need to do with this system was put what they call assisted carbohydrates. So we did find that there is this meal detection technology, which may, even though you make the carb ratio aggressive, sometimes it will limit how much insulin is given at that bolus to try to keep someone in a safe range to prevent hypoglycemia. So one of the ways to counteract that is to put in some additional carbohydrates. So that was something that was part of their goal. And I think that's an important thing to call out. So the system isn't necessarily designed for pregnancy, and we will probably see future, hopefully we'll see future iterations that are more specifically targeted for pregnancy. But I overall am pleased with the results, and I feel confident that this can be an option for some people with diabetes, despite the fact without having the approval, because the reality is we do all kinds of things off-label pregnancy. We're just trying our best to get those outcomes. And achieving 70% time in range in type 1 diabetes, yes, it's hard. It's really, really hard. And so, and the reality is that while maybe the median didn't achieve that, many people did. And I see that in my patients. But people do achieve that, and some are under that. And that's just variations in terms of
it's very difficult, right? It's very difficult. And I think that, you know, it's interesting you call out that they were putting in what we call fake carbs. I think most people with diabetes who are in tight control, you know, put in fake carbs, 5.
That's
the number, right? You go, oh, these are all these 5s. These aren't real. And people are look at you and go, no, those aren't real. I'm frustrated with the number. I got to get it down. I put in 5, right? So this is something we see in hybrid closed loops without diabetes, but it was written into the protocol, which I think is very interesting, right? Because it's forcing the system to give insulin, and it can't not, because you're saying, well, I'm eating this even when you're not eating it, right? So again, I think more to come. We have, this is exciting news. This is the more we see using AID in pregnancy. Remember, none of them are FDA approved in the United States for use in pregnancy. We use them. And so we need more data. We need more studies to say this is how we do this. You know, this is the best way to get the best outcome so that we can then create real guidelines around this.
Right. And the reality is, so it's great. We have these randomized controlled trials now with CAM-APS with 780G. They did not go head to head. They have different patient populations. And so it's good to have options and to understand the nuances, because there are pretty big differences between the algorithms and the types of things that you adjust. And with CAM-APS, which I do hope to get available at some point, but with that system, there's a lot more adjustable features. With 780, there's a lot less adjustable features. And those can both go in multiple directions, just in terms of use and customization. It's nice to have customizable features, but then sometimes if you don't customize them in the optimal way, that actually
It actually makes it worse, not better. Right. So it's this balance of, can we keep this system simple for the clinician to write the orders, to prescribe, to feel comfortable making those changes, and also continue to improve the outcomes of whoever's putting that system on their bodies. So again, more to come. We're going to talk about more of this at ADA. And we're excited about what's in the future with the new pumps that are coming, with what Medtronic's next, you know, studies are about this, you know, really new technology to the United States. You know, 780 is not new to outside the U.S., but it is in the, you know, it is still newer to us here, and we'll have more data soon.
Yeah. And then also, of course, the type. Hopefully we'll see that soon. Sequel twist and see what that looks like in the field. So anyway, that was, thank you for the great discussion.
Yes.
For tuning in to one of our favorite topics, and we will all see you soon.
See you soon.
Next episode. Bye, everyone.